The TSW Roundtable is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Follow at SW Commonwealth on Twitter and take your first steps into a larger world. Welcome to episode 2 of the TSW Roundtable. I am your host slash moderator, and I am very lucky because I get very spoiled. I can podcast with all sorts of different hosts and knights from around the Star Wars Commonwealth Network. So, coming at us all the way from New Mexico and the Skyhoppers podcast, here's our first co-host, Ash. You want to say hi to everybody, Ash?
Hello, everybody.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the show. And our second,
thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thanks for being on. And our second co-host, Tumbling Saber fame, Kyle. You want to say hi to the good folks, Kyle?
Hi, good folks.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so you guys ready to meet our knights for this evening?
Yeah. I think so.
All right, so okay, our first knight this evening from Newfoundland, Canada, it's Nathan Roberts. You want to say hi to everybody, Nathan?
Hello there.
Hello, welcome to the round table.
Wait, was that Nathan or was that Obi-Wan?
Nathan Wong.
I think it was a little James Arnold Taylor in there. Our second knight, coming also from the Great White North, Carlos Candido. You want to say hi, Carlos?
Hi, Carlos.
Classic.
Anyway, so everybody knows, this first time here in the show, this is how we're going to run it. We're going to ask our knights, see if they have a question for the round table, and I think myself and Ash and Kyle and the other knight will try to answer it best as we can, hopefully to their satisfaction. And it's really great because we actually get a nice back and forth instead of the MP3 mail-ins and voicemails. And once you ask that question, once it's out in the ether, you can't that's not what I meant. So hopefully everything, all the questions get answered to everybody's satisfaction. So, Nathan, you want to start us off? What is your question for the roundtable?
Absolutely. It's been a long-running joke for years and years that stormtroopers can't hit anything. Their aim is terrible. You know, it's a big ha-ha. There are memes galore about it. It's a lot of fun. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. How accurate do you guys think that is? Do you think it's fair? I mean, you know, after seeing Rogue One, we've seen plenty of stormtroopers cutting down rebel soldiers. Do you think it's warranted that they have this reputation of not being able to hit anything that they shoot at?
Ash, you want to take a stab at this one?
No, I don't think it's necessary. It's just kind of a joke, right? I mean, Indiana Jones villains are the same thing, or the same way, right? I mean, they can't hit anything. It's just kind of a trope of that particular era of film. I mean, even still, action movies, the guy doesn't get shot when he clearly should. And I also think it might have something to do with the fact that, like, maybe they can't hit anything because Leia and Luke are both force sensitive. And they might be able to, some, like, subconscious part of their brain can dodge the attacks. I mean, that's kind of always where I was thinking why Luke never got shot by a stormtrooper. I think it's more, I honestly think it's just a meme. It's kind of funny. I have a t-shirt that says Stormtrooper Academy School of Superior Marksmen, and I laughed, but I don't think it's warranted to say, well, stormtroopers are a useless villain. But I mean, and again, what you said in Rogue One, they're shown to be, you know, actual competent soldiers,
right?
You know, so I don't think it's warranted at all, really. I think it's just kind of a joke, but
I don't. Well, Kyle, what do you think? Do you think they, any validity behind their lack of marksmanship or?
Well, when you think back to A New Hope, Obi-Wan introduces them to Luke as these lethal lunatics who slaughtered Jawas, and the blast points were too accurate. So apparently they could shoot. And then there's this theory that on aboard the first Death Star, when they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn when it comes to our heroes, oh, that was intentional. They were ordered not to hit them because they wanted them to escape so they could track them back to their base.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know how much validity I put into that, but I'll just play along with it and say, oh, okay, that makes plenty of sense. I'll buy that for a dollar.
Well, yeah.
Then what was their excuse on Bespin? And what was their excuse on Endor? Because they couldn't hit anything there either.
Yes.
I think the Ewoks are just too intimidating that they were just so scared that they missed them, you know? It's like, I mean, those Ewoks are vicious, man.
Or they were trying not to hit them there because they couldn't deal with it.
They couldn't deal
like,
with
oh,
it.
No,
cute. They're too cute.
Oh, no, I've shot the little teddy bear. What do I do?
Yeah. But, you know, honestly, I never really questioned it because I come from the era of G.I. Joe. And if you've ever watched an original episode of G.I. Joe, there's those their own lasers or bullets or whatever you want to call them. They pass between their eyelashes and their fingers and they trace contours around their body, but they never actually hit anybody at all. I just find it hilarious.
I don't. Carlos, what do you think? Do you think is there anything behind any deliberate missing on their part, or?
I think honestly, it's hard to say deliberate. When we look at the beginning of the clones, when you look at let's say Attack of the Clones, they're coming out and they're fighting the droid army,
right?
They're helping the Jedi's fight the droid army. There's something about the way that they're a little bit better than the droids. Because the droids were terrible as well.
Right.
So, I don't know. I think it's just, I think there's something about that galaxy in particular that does not make for 2020 vision.
Right. Well, also too, isn't it there, forgive me if I'm wrong, but there is a difference between the clone army, clone stormtroopers, and the new generation of stormtroopers coming in the New Hope, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the difference? Explain
the clones
that.
The clones were decommissioned shortly after Revenge of the Sith. And okay. Then a volunteer army sprouted up in its place.
Yeah, I've been reading Ahsoka, the Ahsoka novel.
Yeah.
And I just finished a chapter where she says that the clones were being phased out, but she thought that this was a year after Revenge of the Sith or something like that. She said she thought they were being phased out, but there still might be some of the newer clones in the army, but they were being phased out.
Well, they make reference to that in the Force Awakens, don't they?
Yeah, Kylo Ren says, you know, well, maybe your men aren't good enough or whatever, and maybe we should just have used a clone army.
Right.
He said maybe Supreme Leader Snoke should consider using a clone army.
And exactly, and that explains why Finn is Finn and he doesn't look like Boba Fett.
Yeah, but I, as a regular fan, am I supposed to know that they decommissioned them that early? Considering, I don't know.
Does it matter if they decommission them early, though? Because, I mean, it doesn't – like, you don't know what's underneath the helmet at that point, so it doesn't matter if they're a clone or they're not. And it's also implied that clones, you know, age really quickly. Like, like – what is it, Rebels after Revenge of the Sith? It's, like, 15, 16 years after Revenge of the Sith, something like that? And
The growth cycle is doubled or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and Rex and Wolf and Gregor look like old men. So that's probably why they decommissioned them, I'm thinking.
Okay.
Well, and the Kaminoans tell Obi-Wan in episode 2, they say about Bubba, they say he wanted a non-altered clone, no growth acceleration.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe the clones are like genetically trained to be excellent marksmen, and then once they started recruiting, basically drafting off the streets of Coruscant, they can... You know, maybe that can explain the poor marksmanship in The New Hope. But then, again, once you get up to The Force Awakens, you have, like, they're stolen as babies and kidnapped and trained their entire life to be soldiers. So it's kind of hard to believe.
Yeah.
Maybe that New Hope area is the gray area between the voluntary draft and the Force Awakens when they just start stealing kids.
Well, maybe you could argue that the First Order is a little bit more desperate in their training. They have to make them more competent soldiers. But by the time A New Hope comes around, the Empire is pretty, you know,
They've got their grip.
Right. Yeah, they've got their grip on the galaxy, right? So they don't need the super deadly, like the Death Troopers, like Krennic's Death Troopers, which were kind of described as like stormtroopers who can hit their target.
Right.
And they're even like, they're going to show up. I think Thrawn has a garrison of them as well. So I guess you could make the argument like they don't need the super deadly warriors. They just kind of need the kind of barely competent, bumbling, you know, military contractor or something like that. I'm not really sure.
Well, yeah.
That's a great point.
Also strength in numbers with the Empire.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And again, once they had the Death Star, they really didn't care about anything. They were just like, yeah, we got it down. We don't need the Senate. We can do whatever we want. We're just roll around the galaxy in this ball and we're bullies.
It was a bit of arrogance from the Empire's probably not being pushed or, you know, challenged in any way for them to say, you know what, yeah, we're nobody's touching us.
Yep.
So,
like, yeah, wasn't there a line? Numbers.
Yeah.
Wasn't what? There a line like, you know, loyal soldiers are more efficient than tactically bred soldiers or something like that, than the clones? Like, it was better to have a loyal army than a tactically efficient army or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're indoctrinating children to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you could say that the Empire, their biggest downfall was their cockiness, I guess, in a way. They go down on Endor thinking that nothing's going to happen. They're just going to be able to, you know, build the second Death Star with a shield generator, and they don't expect that the little teddy bears are going to start skewering them with sticks and throwing rocks at them, you know? And I would be too. I mean, if I was the Empire, I'd probably be like, well, there's no way anybody can touch us. Like, we have a Death Star.
Yeah.
You know? So, I think their, you know, their cockiness and their hubris was kind of their downfall.
Well, didn't they enslave the Wookiees on Tashik too?
Yeah, they did.
So maybe they're thinking, well, Ewoks and Endor, they can't be any worse than them. Like,
probably.
We took care of Chewbacca. How can we take care of Wicket? Like,
well, and you think about it, stormtroopers are probably trained for, you know, some are probably trained more for crowd control and exactly. keeping a docile society down. Or fighting an enemy that's at least comparable to a similar military, you know, like the rebellion.
Right.
So when you throw something like the Ewoks in that are totally, you know, incomparable to the stormtroopers, the Imperial Army.
Right.
It's not going to be something they're prepared for anyway. It's probably they've probably never been trained for that type of warfare, that type of creative combat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you look at the Ewoks, they have a home field advantage where they know the terrain and stuff. And, you know, these guys are just, it's like the Brits wearing, you know, during colonial times, wearing their woolen tunics and stuff. And, you know, they're in India.
Yeah.
It's like there's no assimilation there, you know, like.
The stormtroopers are in white armor.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very in the jungle. Plastic, impractical armor in a forest.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't stand out at all.
Yeah.
Well, let me run this past you then. If maybe like the clone army, the stormtroopers in the clone army were made for war, and then when they had the involuntary draft in the New Hope before then, just to get the stormtroopers from that era, maybe they were just like military police or just keeping the status quo. They weren't made bred for all out combat type. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. It would make sense. The clones are genetically, like, it's in their genetic code to be warriors. They established that in the Clone Wars lots of times.
Right.
How it's like it's in their code to be loyal to the Republic and to fight. But stormtroopers don't have that. And they wouldn't need it because they won the war.
Yep.
You know? So they'd only need, like, military police.
Yeah.
Who would just go up and, like, rough, like the stormtroopers who were messing with people on Jeddah. You know, just pushing them into the wall. It's like, show me your identification and stuff like that. Mm. I imagine their training wouldn't be as robust as the clones was.
Yeah.
You know, in a book like Lost Stars, they kind of went out of their – well, not out of their way, but Claudia Gray did go to some length to highlight some of the training that these Imperial cadets go through, whether it's for to be a TIE fighter pilot or a regular grunt. And you know, it almost paints them in a competent light where you're like, oh, I wouldn't want to pick a fight with those guys. But then you see them on screen and you're like, where's the Benny Hill music?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Rex says in Rebels that some of the retired clone troopers trained stormtroopers. But I've got a feeling that was probably more specialty type soldiers, like what we've been seeing in the comics and the death troopers and those types of things.
The rocket troopers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rocket troopers. I gotta say, I do love the new Death Troopers, just from purely aesthetically. I think they're really cool.
Yes.
Oh, they're like, so cool.
Shiny black stormtroopers, like, I can't, it's awesome.
I was obsessed with finding a 6-inch Black Series one. I was mad over it.
I literally have one, like, 3 feet away from me.
I eventually found one, but I really had to drive around looking for it.
I tried to hunt down the Ahsoka one for so long, and I couldn't find it, and I paid like in way too much money for it when I eventually found it.
I feel your pain.
I find it funny how in Rogue One, they actually had the normal stormtroopers actually being able to hit their targets, and the Death Troopers that they set up as these, you know, big badass troopers, you know, they set it up so that they couldn't even hit Chirrut when he's walking out in the middle of an open space.
To be fair, Chirrut is a force sensitive.
Oh yes, least. But it was the optics of it was funny. It was a funny irony to it.
Yeah.
Well, the last time we saw something like that was what episode of Rebels was that? Legends of the Lassat, where Agent Kallus orders that Imperial cruiser to open fire on the Ghost, yeah, but they're so close to that star cluster that the laser blasts are literally bending away from it.
Right.
And Kallus's eyes open wide, like, WTF, what is going on here?
That's a great episode.
Yeah, it really is.
Awesome. So, Nathan, has the roundtable success answered your question to your satisfaction, or are we just spinning our wheels? Are we still right back to where we were?
I am satisfied.
You are satisfied.
I will just say that I agree with the theory that Kyle floated. I've agreed with that for a long time, that they weren't intending to hit their targets on the Death Star, at least.
Right.
Just based on Leia's line after they escape, after the TIE fighter battle, she says, they let us escape. It was too easy. And Han says, easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and also, too, I think we can agree that, you mean, there is a distinct difference between the clone army being a battle army and the new stormtroopers being a military police. So, yeah, maybe, I guess, in our headcanon, that can explain. We can watch the movies and be like, okay, yeah, I'm fine with that. I can swallow that.
Yeah, it doesn't make up for the other movies, but for that in particular.
Oh, okay.
I think it works.
I mean, it's never been one of those things that I thought was particularly egregious, right? It was just like, oh, they're the bad guys. Of course they're going to miss. Just because I grew up on like Indiana Jones and stuff like that, where the bad guys never hit anything.
Well, to be fair, they hit plenty of background characters.
That is true.
Awesome.
Well, and look, sorry, last thing.
Yeah, of course.
George Lucas kind of set the table for us in the 97 special editions when he had Greedo miss from point blank range.
Oh, yeah.
So from that point on, it should not surprise any of us if anybody could not hit a target whatsoever.
Well, yeah.
You know,
go ahead.
You know what the sad thing about that is? I'm 20, so I grew up on the special editions, and I never knew there was another version of that scene until I was like 15 or 16. And right. I was like, wait, that one is way better.
I'll say something controversial, and we don't have to go into it, but I will say I prefer Greedo shooting first.
I mean, it's debatable. I mean, there's so many like explanations for why it works when Greedo shoots first or why it doesn't work or whatever. It's like, it's one of those age old things that we will always be complaining about on the internet, you know?
No, look, if you look at Texas or you look at, I think in New Mexico as well, there's a law called the Stand Your Ground. Now, as soon as Greedo pulls his gun and puts it on Han can shoot him at any time. That's my opinion. So it's not murder. It's self-defense.
Well, Ash, does Mos Eisley, is there anything in New Mexico that resembles that hive of scum and villainy?
Yes, well, it's New Mexico, and there's sand everywhere.
Yes, there is sand. There is sand everywhere, and it is also rough and coarse and irritating and gets everywhere. But
I hate sand.
But there's also this thing called White Sands in New Mexico where you can go like sledding on hills, and it looks a lot like Tatooine.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I always thought when I was a kid. I was like, look, Dad, we're at Tatooine. And he was like, okay, it's okay.
Loser.
Hey, Ash, isn't there a big salsa festival in New Mexico every year? Like a really huge one?
You're going to have to specify which one. There's like five. there's salsa, there's chili, there's barbecue cook-offs. It's like, yeah, it's great. I love living here.
Were you born there? Yeah, it's you're from the area?
Yeah, born and raised, yeah.
That's like saying, is there a smoked meat sandwich or a poutine festival where you are, Kyle?
Every day, the smoked meat and poutine festival. Actually, you know what? Our prime minister was actually at a restaurant, a smoked meat restaurant, right down the road from me. And this is how I like to stretch the truth. So if we consider Montreal to have the best smoked meat in Canada,
okay,
hands down.
How about you has the best Montreal smoked meat? Okay. No, so go ahead.
I stretch that too. If we have the best smoked meat in Canada, and nobody else really serves it, we have this best smoked meat in the world. Therefore,
right.
And so
the best Montreal smoked meat. Sorry.
Smoked wheat is probably a different thing, and you may want to talk to the guys in Vancouver about that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just me.
You gotta make it down to the States, man. We have the best barbecue. Texas, North Carolina. It's amazing.
Yeah, it hurts me a lot that I haven't been down there for that.
Missouri, yes.
All right. Okay. So Kyle, now you got me hooked. We're going along with the premise Montreal is the best smoked meat. So,
it's not a premise.
Okay.
It's just a well-known fact. No,
okay,
come on,
yeah, sure. I'll give it to you.
Okay, let me jump in here. Okay, the only other people who say they have the best smoked meat are New Yorkers.
Oh yeah,
and
no.
But they serve
they're liars meat, though.
And it's not the same thing. It's like a dark brown compared to like the beautiful rosé of the smoked meat. Cannot compare. No comparison. No. Hands down, Montreal. Discussion over.
All right. So JT was enjoying a smoked meat sandwich from a block away from you, or?
Yeah, like a 5-minute drive from here.
Oh, nice. Well, there you go.
If you're a JT fan.
If you are a JT fan.
See, everybody comes down to New Mexico for the Mexican food. I mean, there's a restaurant right down the road that Bill Clinton's been to like 5 times.
Well, come on.
And yeah.
It's Bill.
Anybody besides Bill Clinton? I mean, he's been everywhere.
There's been like actors and other stuff like that. It's really good Mexican food, I will say.
He's vegan, so he has to go everywhere to try to find food.
Right.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, well, that ends the food portion of the round table.
That's Bill Clinton's excuse. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Honey. I needed to find a place to eat.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Oh, Bill, there you are.
I did not eat red meat.
Okay.
There was like 40 other people I could have used in that example, but Bill Clinton was the first one that came to mind. Because when you walk in that restaurant, there's like 6 photos of Bill Clinton shaking the owner's hand.
Well, and it was perfect. Well placed.
And you're probably thinking, all these Canadians, who will they recognize? Oh, right. Yes, Bill. Yes. He was in the news.
A little bit.
Okay. Let's try to get back on track here. So if your question is completely answered to your satisfaction, Nathan, we'll move on to Carlos. Do you have anything for the roundtable to discuss this evening?
I have The Last Jedi, we just got the news that the title of Episode 8 is going to be The Last Jedi. And do you think they came to that conclusion rather quickly after Carrie Fisher passing? Like, do you think that had anything to do with it? Because in theory, she could have become a Jedi. So
no.
She couldn't? Sorry. She couldn't have become a Jedi? Is that what you're saying?
I do not subscribe to the idea that Leia should ever be a Jedi.
No. She could be. She chooses not to be. Right or wrong?
Hypothetically, yes.
Okay.
But I don't think she'd ever make the choice.
Okay.
I don't think they were going to do that.
Yeah. No. So more towards the question, because we lost Carrie Fisher and now Princess Leia is now going to be obviously phased out somehow, or however they deal with it, do you think that influenced the title of the Episode 8?
That's my question, pretty much.
My understanding is that Rian Johnson had that title in his back pocket almost from the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark Hamill just did an interview where he said that he's known that title for a long time, I think.
For Episode 8 and not Episode 9?
Yeah.
Mm. That's what I'm getting at. I think that there was a little shuffling happening.
Moving things along, yeah. Possibly. Yeah,
he didn't specify that, but I don't know if he would have.
I really don't think it had any... I mean, because Leia's not a Jedi, right?
Right.
I don't think they were ever going to make her a Jedi, had any plans. Maybe she would have used the Force briefly, but she was always more like, what is the word, like, imp, imp, I'm not. She was like, she could. Empathic. She used the Force. Empathic. Thank you. Yeah. So she could use the Force to like sense other people's emotions. You see, in Shattered Empire, she touches something, and she's in a place, and she gets a vision of Darth Maul and stuff like that. I don't think she ever would have been a Jedi, and I think the story was never going to focus on her. I think it was always going to be about Luke and Rey.
Right.
So I really don't think that it would have changed anything with Carrie Fisher's passing.
Well, also too, I think more to Carlos's question, like with Carrie Fisher actually passing, and now we know that Princess Leia's arc is probably going to end. The Last Jedi, that answers the question. Oh well, no, he's our last hope. No, there is another, and now officially we can say no, there won't be another. You know what I mean? Like, even though like she would never ever eventually become a Jedi, as we knew that in Return of the Jedi, we still knew there's no way she's grabbing a lightsaber and taking that mantle.
Unless you look at the old expanded universe,
yeah.
She does become a Jedi, and I hated it, but yes. That's besides the point.
Well, and they kind of close that book. You know what? I keep having to reference the new canon, like novels and comics, and yeah, that's cool for the people that put aside the time and money to read it. But for everybody else who don't want to do that, and I don't blame anybody who doesn't swallow all that stuff, you miss out on those answers, right? Because they kind of close the book on Leia as even a potential Jedi. In, I don't know if it's Aftermath.
It's in Life Dead, I believe.
It's Life Dead, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, she just... Yeah, I think they spell it out that she chose politics. She chose her duty to the galaxy in that regard. And even though she kind of picked up a few things from Luke here and there, that was enough for her. And she just really didn't even want to become a Jedi.
Well, it wasn't her path. It was, you know, I mean, it's like what's that old saying there? You have two kids, one for the cloth, you know, the one for the army. One for the armor. You mean like it was almost like Leia was the armor and Luke was the cloth. Like he was following that, you mean the Jedi dogma. Like he was following that path, I guess.
And I mean, yeah, I think. Go ahead.
I was going to say, even in that scene in Jedi that you referenced where he says there is another, I don't know if that necessarily means he necessarily had to mean that she would go about things the same way that Luke would have. He could have been talking about her as or in the context of her being a rebellion leader.
Right.
Of, you know, if Luke fails at this, then, well, we do have a plan B, and that's that the rebellion can actually succeed as hard as it would be without Luke.
Yeah, but Obi-Wan kind of makes it clear when he says that boy was our only hope. Like, I mean, the rebellion existed before Luke.
Well, yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, let's rephrase this. Okay, maybe they know there's the Emperor, they know there's Vader, and they know maybe in their back pocket, their trump card, the only way to make Vader turn on the Emperor, if there is a chance, is the Padawan or Padme's child. Like, so they know that Luke, oh, he's our only hope because he's his son. Nobody else is going to talk Vader into turning against the Emperor, but maybe his son might. And now, oh, if Luke goes off and dies, well, maybe his daughter can. Like, not speaking, that's ignoring the Force, ignoring the rebellion, ignoring everything else. Do you understand what I'm kind of getting at?
Yeah.
That the power, the influence of having your child say, come on, Dad, like, enough of this, like, you know.
Up to that point, Luke was the only one that Vader knew about, the only child that he knew about. He didn't know that Leia was his child at that point.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Ash.
Sorry, and it's really not the Force or Luke Skywalker's power that saves Vader. It's the fact that he's his son, so that would make sense.
Mm.
I mean, it's when he throws down his lightsaber and says he's not going to fight, and then gets shocked by the Emperor. Yeah. That's what snaps Vader out of it. It wasn't him being a super powerful badass with a lightsaber, you know.
Yeah, and on the flip side, that's just exactly what Vader was doing to try to turn Luke. Was saying, "Oh, there is another. You mean if I can't get you, I'll just get your sister," and that just he snaps all his crayons and away they go, right?
Like, the wires touch and it's game time.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know if this is true or not. The idea that a Force ghost can only appear to somebody that they have a relationship with. So who would, like, if say Luke turns and joins Vader on the dark side, and let's say they were referencing Leia as the other potential Jedi that could reel it all back in. How would Leia have been recruited and cultivated as a Jedi? Mm-hmm. Like, who would have appeared? Like, Obi-Wan and Yoda never met Leia except for when she was first born. And I don't know if that's enough of a quote-unquote connection to then be able to appear to her and say, we need you to do this.
Right, there would have been no one left to train her.
Or yeah. tell, or even tell her, or actually, what's her adopted father?
Bail Organa.
Bail Organa. Maybe he could have told her, but okay, I know he was on Alderaan.
He planned to.
But maybe because we saw him with the Rebels in Rogue One around the battle on Yavin 4, maybe he wasn't on Alderaan when it blew up. So maybe he could have told Leia.
In Bloodline, it was established that Bail Organa was on Alderaan when it blew up, for one thing. And the other thing is that he planned he's gone. Sorry,
space dust.
Yeah, but also in Bloodline, one of the things, the catalyst in Bloodline, I don't know if you've read it, is that everybody finds out that Vader is Leia's father. Okay. So how they figure this out is there's this music box that has a recording from Bail Organa, and it says, you know, Vader's your father, and I hope one day I will be able to take you to Tatooine. And tell you about, and we'll meet your brother and Obi-Wan Kenobi, and we'll be able to stop him. So I think Bail Organa always planned to tell her.
Yep.
Yeah.
That Lady Carice, what a.
What's his name? What's his name? Rack? What's his, the jerk in Bloodline whose name escapes me?
Starts with a C.
Ransom Casterfo.
Ransom Casterfo. Yes.
Yeah. But. To be fair, Return of the Jedi is kind of one of those Raiders situations where Luke really wasn't necessarily responsible for destroying the Emperor or achieving the victory. Really, it was Leia and the rest of the Rebels. If they had just succeeded without Luke having gone to the Death Star at all, really, things would have turned out the same way. The Death Star would have blown up with Vader and Palpatine on board. Yeah. And
well, I think, too, Luke's sacrifice was Vader knows I'm here. He knows where I am. They won't stop looking for me. And if they find me, they're going to find you. So I'm going to give myself up. You guys go ahead and blow up the Death Star with me and Vader and Emperor on it. Now, yeah. Exactly, your point's correct. Like, the Rebels would have won if
same outcome either
if all
way.
Three of them died when Lando blew the thing up, but spoilers, he blew it up. Anyway.
Yeah. Spoilers for a movie that came out 30 years ago.
On a Star Wars podcast.
Yes.
So anyway, yeah, but I think for us as the viewer, the only thing is that gives us that Vader's redemption, that gives us closure, that bookends
the whole. That's Luke's victory, is his redemption.
Right.
But I don't think Luke's intention was to kill the Emperor or Vader. Luke makes it abundantly clear from the start that his mission, his goal, is like, okay, you guys blow up the shield generator, and then the team in the sky will go take out the Death Star. But I have to see if I can save my father.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
I would say okay. So back. Let me try to circle this back around. With Carrie Fisher not being with us. Now back to the original question. Did that influence the title? Probably not, right? I don't know. Around the table, what do you think?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Nathan?
No, I think that title has been around for quite some time for Episode 8.
I'm not sure if it was, honestly, in my point of view, I don't think it was around for Episode 8. I think it was around, and they probably had that in their back pocket for Episode 9. But go ahead.
Oh, I have to. That's because each movie is being directed by a different director. So if Rian Johnson specifically said he had that title, I believe it's intended for Episode 8 and was always intended for that film.
That's a good point.
Because I don't know who's directing Episode 9, but it's not Rian Johnson. So
Colin Trevorrow.
Yes, thank you.
Is Rian Johnson writing Episode 9 and Colin Trevorrow is directing it?
Yeah, he's producing or writing. Something like that. And I know J.J. Abrams is producing all of them as well.
Yeah, executive producing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever that means, right?
It
means he has money and could give his opinion.
Yeah. Well, I
he's
guess
pretty much helping finance and yeah.
I'm sure too. He's been at the writing table and the at least the general outline of the trilogy.
Yeah.
You're gonna see a bad robot credit.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Those movies.
Yes.
Sure.
All right, awesome.
Now, if I can, I don't know if we have time here.
Oh, we got lots of time.
This kind of brings me to see a little trick. See, I think Corey would be proud of me right now, Kyle.
Oh, you got like a little loophole. You're going to loophole this?
Yeah.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, you're literally going to basically.
Here we go. So
basically.
Basically, literally.
What it is.
Cheers.
Yeah, exactly. It comes back to Leia and her story. Now, people are coming, you know, I've listened to the Tumbling Saber. I've listened to Gen X-Wing and the Skyhoppers, all you guys, and mostly talk Star Wars about what's Leia, what are they going to do with Leia's character going beyond episode 8. And I think Mark had a good point by saying that whatever they filmed so far, they could stretch it out over 2 movies.
Right.
As opposed to ending her cycle after this movie.
Okay.
And others talked about recasting. There was an actress on Stranger Things. I think James was saying that could potentially play Leia.
Younger Leia, though.
Exactly. But just the idea of recasting. But then when you take it also to the CGI, everybody's like, oh, I'm not sure about the CGI. For me, I'd rather have her on a ship that just goes.
Well, exactly. And to that point, Carlos, I was going to mention, I knew we were going to step on this today, but to mention with Carrie, with her, if she's on a ship and we hear the transmission break up and the ship's blown up, yeah, everything she's done is been filmed already. Everything that everybody up, the film is basically done and it's in the can, but maybe when they go back for reshoots, they can go back and get reaction shots from, you mean, so if you had Rey and Chewbacca in the Millennium Falcon, you knew Leia was on another ship, that ship blows up, you can actually, okay, now we have to retool something and say, okay, let's get Rey and Chewbacca's reaction to Leia blowing up. Like, you won't have Carrie Fisher's death scene on screen, like as her acting it, but you can actually, you still have all the other players. You can record the reactions.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's the most respectful way they can handle it. I really don't want them to try and push it out in episode 9 and kind of do like CG scenes or whatever. Partially because it just makes me a little uneasy with the CG scenes in general.
Yeah.
If the actor is deceased, like it felt kind of weird in Rogue One when I saw Peter Cushing. I'm like, wait, he couldn't say whether this was cool or not. Like, it was cool from the perspective of, oh, look, it's Tarkin. But at the same time, I mean, honestly, I think Carrie Fisher would be cool with it because apparently when she saw Rogue One, when they digitally recreated her, she like burst into tears and was super happy with it.
Yeah, and also too, Carrie Fisher has been on record saying Princess Leia. Yeah, that's Princess Leia is her. Is Carrie Fisher, mm-hmm. Carrie Fisher person, but she's also the custodian of that character. She said that time and time again in every documentary you watch, you'll hear her utter that sentence. So she was well aware that she is, yes, she was the first one to do it, but she knows she is the custodian of this character. So I think as far as Carrie is concerned, she would be flattered with CGI, she'd be flattered with whatever the way they do it, but it's obviously, she's not with us, so it's the fans that's Disney's going to worry about the reaction.
Did anybody catch Bright Lights, the HBO documentary?
Yep.
Yes, I did.
No, not yet. No.
Did you get the impression, Ash? It was specifically when it came to the whole "I'm the custodian of Leia" and her going out and meeting fans, doing cons. Like, I got the impression that it was really taxing on her and it exhausted her and it made her anxious. But she did it because, you know, she cares. She cares about the fans. She cares about the character and her legacy as the character. But I got the impression that if she could share that burden with somebody, she would.
Exactly.
But that was
my point. Like with what you said, Kyle, with her saying she's a custodian, that means like she is just the caretaker of this character.
Yeah, I don't think she would have a problem if she had to be. Recast is sort of a scary word for us all. And let's be frank. Nobody wants to be in this situation. Not the fans, especially not Lucasfilm, not her family. This sucks.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. The
somebody's going to have to make a hard call.
The unfortunate thing is that a lot of that burden now shifts to her family. Her family and her friends, you know? Like, a lot of that burden shifts to Billy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, she has to kind of carry that, in a sense, right? She has to make a lot of these decisions going forward. You know, she's got to be in discussion with Lucasfilm about what they do, right? It's not an easy situation for anyone
Also, Nathan, I was thinking, like, as a knee-jerk reaction, when we lost Carrie Fisher, it was a loss. And then in the back of everybody's mind, especially we're literally on a fan show of a fan show for a franchise. Like, so everybody thinks, oh, my God. What's the saga? What's going to happen? And it's we feel guilty and we feel awful for thinking it or even uttering it. But and if any tragedy happens, whether you lose a parent or a favorite uncle or anybody in your life or your dog, the first thing you think of is, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And it's a knee jerk reaction. And it's the same thing when we lose somebody like this. What's going to happen with my saga? Because obviously it means a lot. You mean, so that, you get over it and you're like, yeah, no, there's a bigger picture. It's okay to feel that right off the bat. And nobody should feel guilty for feeling that. Of course, if you go on social media and rant about, oh, what am I going to do? Like, no, okay, just relax. Just deal with it on your own.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's completely natural for everybody to be worrying about, oh, what's going to – because that is the natural knee-jerk reaction a human has to a loss, whether as strange as it may seem, like it's
even from a legal sense, right? It's something to be considered.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, and when they signed that 3-pitcher deal, like they were saying with the insurance, they're getting like obviously this was, especially at their age, this was written into their contract. Like,
yeah. Let's be honest. Luke almost died. I mean, Mark Hamill almost died after episode 4.
Yep.
So
he got a motorcycle accident.
Yeah,
like that. Yeah, I mean,
stuff happens.
I completely agree with you, Rob. I mean, I think you know that it. I think everybody had that knee jerk reaction when we heard about Carrie Fisher. It was like, oh, what's going to happen?
Yep.
And honestly, I think from everything that I've heard Carrie Fisher say, I've read every single book she's ever written, all of her autobiographies and stuff like that. And I think she would want Leia. Sorry, I think
person.
It's become that in my mind. Well, Carrie Fisher kind of treated it like that as well,
that's what makes it so hard.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think she would want the character to go out with a bang, you know. And if that means CGI, then I can get over my slight uneasiness with recreating characters, because I think honestly she'd give a crap about how that character's arc would end, you know.
Yes.
Well, I actually had an idea of how they could do it, and again, this is a very specific fan idea, but it was something similar to this. I think would be really respectful and really, if they did it right, they could pull it off. If you did the whole death thing, you know, off screen death, whether it was a ship blowing up or whatever, but then you had a hologram message, kind of like Galen in Rogue One, where it was a CGI Leia as a hologram, a message in case of my death type thing, where she's handing off the leadership to, say, Poe Dameron or someone else. You could have that in episode 9. Maybe Billy would perform it. You know, who knows? This is 3 years out.
Well, you also, I think you're onto something there, because with a hologram, with the shimmering hologram, they don't have to be perfect with the CGI.
Yeah, you can. There's room for play there. It doesn't have. It's a bit more forgiving.
You just hit that one right out of the park. That was like exactly the perfect way to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
As long as it's not a Tosha Yar season 1 Next Generation Star Trek hologram message at her funeral. Oh, please no. Like, as long as it's not.
And you can even have the voice shuddering at points where maybe the performer didn't quite get it right. You know, you can have a little
perfect
or something, right?
And to my rotten son, I bequeath my collection of Alderanian jams and jellies.
I think one of the funniest things.
Go ahead, Carlos.
Just hitting on what Kyle just said, I have to give big props to @ Chop Rules for his jalapeno jelly that he gave me when we went to watch.
I thought you were going to give big props to Nathan for his awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Corey, thank you. Beautiful. I love that. I spread that on toast. You may continue.
All right.
No, I was just going to say, I think one of the funniest things Carrie Fisher ever said was somebody was asking her about Kylo Ren, and she just went, "My little Hitler." And I just died. Like, it was like, oh my gosh, she's Leia.
Well, that's one of the things, right? By the rumor mill, there's two big things that are going to happen with Leia. One is a reunion with Kylo, and the other is a reunion with Luke. In what order, we don't know. But to me, those two things still have to happen. They have to find a way to get those on screen. No matter what they do, fans will be split on set, right? You're right. That was in Ireland, right?
Yeah, so they were on the same set at the same time in costume. So.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And they did finish principal photography of Episode 8 before she passed away, and I can't imagine them not including that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Awesome. I think Nathan nailed it. We can have a react. We can have the idea of the ship blowing up. We can go back and post, and we can get the rest of the cast reaction to, oh my god, the ship blew up. And then again, Nathan with his hologram idea, it's perfect. The CGI can be flawed. It makes, and of course with Carrie Fisher, how she explains how she recorded that original hologram in New Hope, how they had to record it from different angle by angle, and she knew that speech, like, it would be fitting. It would kind of bookend it all, and
yeah.
There we go. It's solved. Yeah. Done.
let's hope they treat it with respect is the only thing. I can't imagine that they won't. But that's all I'm concerned about, really.
Well, it just goes to show that I could have that idea, you know, out for a walk, you know, just, you know, having this stuff running through my head. I could come up with a decent idea. These guys are the brain trust. These guys are the ones who are really the custodians of the whole story.
Right.
They can come up with something that's well done, that's respectful, and that we can all appreciate it.
Absolutely.
But the fact that you're able to take that walk and you're removed from the situation and not personally invested, maybe, you know, they're having a harder time coming around, you know, deciding on a certain type of idea, or, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for being outside of that bubble.
They definitely have more to consider. They have legalities and relations and PR and family relations.
But
and all
they
that
also
stuff.
They also know the story arc too. So they know.
Yes.
We are going literally just off. We know she's filmed something, and we know how The Force Awakens ended. So.
And we're thinking that Episode 8 is going to be dark. Maybe she dies at the end anyway. Maybe, you know. I mean, rumors are she had a bigger role in 9.
Right.
We don't know what that role was. It could have been, you know, flashbacks. Yeah, but
that's like Harrison Ford. He signed for all three. And is he coming back?
Right.
You mean, like,
He might.
They can't. Exactly. But that's what I mean. So we can't take anything out of the legal office and take it as etch it in stone and saying, oh, they're all back because they have to.
Well, I mean, Felicity Jones and Diego Luna had a 3-picture deal with Lucasfilm as well, and they're dead. Like, they got blown up by a Death Star. I'm sorry, there's no coming back from that.
And we've never had flashbacks per se in saga movies before, but we have had, people call it force backs, but visions of the past, you know, in Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So, you know, there could be things that happened with Han Solo that are relevant to the plot going forward, that a character has to see, that Rey has to see, or even maybe Kylo has to see. They have a vision of the past. Maybe Han Solo's in it. You know, who knows?
Yeah, there were rumors floating around that was actually a possibility. I'm not sure how credible that actually is, but yeah. Just the flashbacks thing in general.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think we tackled that question too. We got a little bit of time. I just want to add one more thing. I was watching New Hope, and I was watching, of course, the trench run, and Luke Skywalker shoots, torpedoes go in, and I think Rogue One, for me anyway, set up, like, when Luke exhales, when he oh my god, like you when he actually after he fires torpedoes, that one tiny moment means so much, considering mm-hmm. everything that had to happen leading up to it. Definitely. With them getting the plane. Like, I mean, it just, for some reason, I've seen that. And again, I've seen that movie in the drive-in with my parents when it, in 1977. Like, and I've seen it a billion yep. times. And then all of a sudden I'm looking at it differently going, oh my God, that it's like, yeah, whoo, I made it. And instead of having this whole movie arc, oh, we beat the bad guy. Now it's like, oh, everything in Rogue One meant something. Like, it was just, I don't know. What do you guys think?
That's why Rogue One worked so well for me. It was a good standalone as well. Right. Like, it told a complete beginning, middle, and end story. But all the things that it did added so much more, like, weight to A New Hope. Like what you were saying with the Death Star run.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, they had to get through so much to get to this point. And you think about it, look at it from Galen Erso's perspective, right? The man's been working for 13 years
yeah.
and he put a flaw in a system. He had no idea if anybody was ever going to be able to figure it out, but he had like a chance. There was just a little sliver of hope yeah. that it was going to work. And if you just look at it from that perspective, it's like, dang, there was a lot that happened
yes.
in order for this moment to work.
Exactly.
And it just makes it
yeah.
so much more, it makes it so much better.
And that's why
when you think about how many times along the way it could have all fallen apart.
Oh,
it just
yeah.
makes it.
Oh yeah.
You know, they brought the plans back to the Death Star.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were aboard they were in R2 on the Death Star. It like the Empire had it and they didn't even know it.
And add on top of all of that, Luke wasn't even the one who was supposed to make that shot.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, supposed to be a red leader.
Well, that was just my point. Like, it's like that his when he actually, it's just like, wow, it just has such levity now. It's like it, more so than it did. It's strange.
Yeah. Well, let me throw this to you then. It's a question I asked the guys over at Talk Star Wars, and I think they were split. But I also gave it to Corey and James, and they I think they kind of liked it. So let me ask you guys, especially for those who read Catalyst. So Lyra was obviously a big Force follower, although she could not really use the Force. She could feel it. Galen is a man of science. Take it or leave it when it comes to the Force. So when he built this flaw, you know, and I think Rob at Talk Star Wars said, well, maybe they weren't considering it, as an attack that had to happen from space. It could have been you can destroy this thing from inside the Death Star too. But I wondered if some of Lyra's belief in the Force had eventually rubbed off on Galen, and he built the flaw knowing that only someone attuned to the Force could make that kind of shot that would destroy the Death Star.
It's an interesting theory, you know. But I don't think he actually knew it was the exhaust port that goes to the reactor that blows it up, because Pablo Hidalgo said something along the lines of Galen really only just made the flaw, like made it so that if you get a shot in there, it'll blow up. So I don't know if he was consciously thinking about that. It's interesting though. I do think some of Lyra's, I did read Catalyst just to let you know. I do think some of Lyra's belief in the Force does rub off on him by the end of it, you know?
Yeah, I haven't read the novelization, but I think in that he actually signs off on the exhaust port, but I don't think they actually make the connection that he knew that it was by the exhaust port that they would actually blow up the reactor.
I'm just saying that because it's something I heard Pablo Hidalgo say on like episode of the Star Wars show or something like that.
Yeah, what does he know?
Look, either way, I have to agree with Ash. Everything that they're doing right now is just making the whole saga better. They're tying up loose ends, and it's just putting things into context that we can, like, you know, put to bed and actually look forward to what's coming up, as opposed to all the crappy things that happened.
We can stop complaining about the exhaust port after 30 years.
Yes,
it's about
exactly.
time.
30, exactly. 40.
40, you know, that, yeah.
That 8-bit little cartoon of
The plans,
yeah. Like, that was classic. It was part of the charm. It was part of the charm of Star Wars. But I mean, if I had my way, there, you know, I would love to go back and just redo those films. But
yeah.
Well, I mean, and you know, I you know what? I can act like I said, I was actually at watched it projected when the hype was going on, but I was very, very young, but I was there. And when the movie started and then the Star Destroyer flies overhead and it comes in the view, like, it was, that movie was absolutely epic for its time. It was mind blowing. Empire was mind blowing, like with the AT-ATs and it was unbelievable. So I know it's very hokey looking back on it, and again, when George Lucas brushed them up before he came out with the prequels, that's completely fine too, because now when you watch them, it's not so jarring when you watch Revenge of the Sith and then all of a sudden you watch New Hope. Meaning, like, it's, I understand how wanting them to be remade now, yeah, I can see it, but still, there was really nothing wrong with them. It's, you know, it was just as awesome to see that. New Hope, or sorry, just Star Wars as what it was called back then. It was just as awesome to see that in 1977 on the big screen as it was. We just watched Rogue One in 2016. It was just as awe-inspiring. You know what I mean?
Actually, one of my favorite things about Rogue One, I'm a big fan of production design. I make replica props and stuff like that, so I love... Right. I just can't get enough. I just can't get enough of that stuff. One of my favorite things about Rogue One was how it looked kind of crappy in some parts. And just how Darth Vader's costume was not the cool one you remember from Empire Strikes Back. It was the kind of crappy one from A New Hope with the red lenses and the cheap looking cape. Like, I loved that so much. Just because I'm a nerd about that stuff, I think it's great.
Or the Rebels awkward helmet at the end of
that.
Yes. It's like, yeah.
Or that one guy on Yavin who's just pointing the thing, like pointing the tracking thing. I'm like, what's your job, man? I don't know, but I really don't care. It's a nice callback.
Yeah, but going back to your point of how they're fixing things, I think that a lot of this stuff is stuff that people like Pablo and Leland Chi and Matt Bart, I think it's stuff that these guys have been wanting to fix for a long time, and now they're finally getting the chance to go in and clean some of this stuff up. These guys have been thinking about this for like 30, 40 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
like all of us, right?
Yeah. So now they have the opportunity to go in and fix these things, like the exhaust port and these little details that were kind of annoying before, and now they're finally starting to make sense.
Like, I always tell myself, like, the best and the worst thing that ever happened to Star Wars was George Lucas, because he invented it, but he kind of fumbled his way through making them, and they were like super flawed.
But he made a lot of stuff up as he went.
Yeah, but look, we were talking about how the Millennium Falcon leaves the Death Star, and there's the two TIE fighters coming after them, and they shoot them down. And don't be cocky, kid. Yay, we did it. And then Leia hugs Chewbacca, and then 2 seconds later, she's like, they let us get away. So why are you so happy that we did it? There's just so much awkwardness. It's hard to get behind, like, looking back now. But like I said, if we can just look back on those things fondly and look forward to the kick-ass killer stuff that they're going to be making now, then I'm fine with it.
I mean, honestly, I'm at the point where it's just like, I don't care. I don't care that stormtroopers can't shoot anything. I don't care. It's a fun space fantasy movie. I don't come to Star Wars for realism. No. I don't talk about Star Wars every week on my show because, you know, it's of its gritty, realistic plot lines and deep, deep character moments. It's a silly, fun space opera that I just love a lot, you know? Yeah. And that stuff really matters to me, really.
Yeah. And if you've got any kind of creative brain at all, you can fix those things in your head.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's all headcanon.
I mean, I grew up in the era of fan fiction. So it's just all that stuff is just fixed.
Yeah.
For me anyway, you know.
Awesome. Okay, so we're hitting on an hour here, pretty close. If speaking of all that, the remakes and everything else, Kyle, when I was listening to Tumbling Saber, I think it was your main show 2 episodes ago, you're talking about viewing order.
We talked about that recently.
Yeah. So, well, okay. I was listening to it, and I was going to send you an MP3 or somewhere, a voicemail, but this is my official, just to end the show here, just to pass it around the table. The official viewing order for me is New Hope, Empire. You end off with Luke, or I'm your father, all this thing. Jump back, go Phantom Menace, Clone Wars, Revenge of the Sith, and then once you get Vader reveal, it's like, oh my God, how did this happen? Oh, well, here's three movies. You watch the prequel, and then boom, you come back and you watch Jedi. And that's just for the first six. You can throw in the
and
other
then
ones.
Then Caravan of Courage, and so on and so on.
Where would you throw in the animated Clone Wars movie in that?
Oh, that's
technically
after.
A Star Wars movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. But like I'm saying, for the original two trilogies, go 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, boom, end it with 6. Like, if you're going to introduce it brand new to somebody, and then of course you throw on 7, and Rogue One would be too confusing somewhere. But anyway,
that's actually the viewing order I did when I showed my sister Star Wars. For some reason we grew up in the same house, but we never watched the same movies. Okay. So she had never seen Star Wars, and The Force Awakens was coming out, and I was in full hype mode. So I was like, okay, you're gonna watch Star Wars. So that was the viewing order that we went through, and I think she got a lot out of it that way. Because I'd seen it on the internet or something. I'm like, I'm gonna try it because I can't experience it.
Oh
like
yeah,
this.
You did the 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when we watched it the 2 days before The Force Awakens came out.
Oh, wow.
So she got like the full Star Wars experience. And then we rewatched them when Rogue One came out because she became a Star Wars fan.
Nice.
Baptism of Star Wars.
Kyle, yep. What do you think of that order? Do you think that has any validity to it, or is it?
Yeah, for sure. I think it really does. Let's face it, the originals existed on their own 2 feet for 40 years without the – or for a long, long time without the prequels.
Right.
So you don't necessarily have to go in order. When I had that conversation with my podcast mates, Corey and James, I was coming at it more from the angle that why do us, you know, kids from the 70s and 80s, why do we insist so much that we recreate the same experience for our kids? You know, things are different now, but
saying something about his kid's going to play two button Mario or something ridiculous like that.
And his kid's first cell phone is going to be a pager, and then he's going to have the suitcase battery phone.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I grew up, though. My dad showed me Indiana Jones and Star Wars when I was a kid, and we played 80s arcade games and listened to 80s music and stuff like that. I'm firmly a millennial who's like stuck in the 80s. So,
well, yeah, no, but I don't know if you've heard the episode. Corey was reaching there. He was talking about, no, his kid's got to play Mario, then he's going to play Sonic or something. And I'm like, where? What? No.
I do distinctly remember my dad, when I was 6, my dad taking me to The Phantom Menace and then going, hating it, and then going, okay, kid, you're going to watch all of the original trilogy, because I hadn't seen it at that point.
Okay.
And he's like, this is the good
Star Wars.
Oh,
you saw The Phantom Menace first?
The Phantom Menace was my first Star Wars experience.
Oh, I love The Phantom Menace.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
I like it, too. Oh. I like the prequels.
I love them all.
I
love
the prequels.
Me
too.
10 years ago, I had a different opinion of it than what I do now. Like I've softened on it a whole lot in the last few years.
Just like I said a minute ago, if you've got any kind of creative brain, you can fix the problems in your head.
Things that bothered me.
Yeah, but the problems in your head can't be. You can't fix bad acting. That's the thing.
Sure you can.
I will firmly admit that the reason I like the prequels is because nostalgia goggles. Is because I grew up with that was my Star Wars. I mean, I'm 21,
but
that was. Firmly.
That being said, as much as I know there's lots of we don't have time, but we don't want to get into the divisiveness of the prequels, yay or nay. But how many of us would love to see Christian Hayden's in that back to tank on Mustafar in Rogue One, like just
absolutely.
Once, even a glimpse? I would have crapped my pants. It would have been so awesome.
Absolutely,
I would sell my first
just
child.
For the sake of like visual consistency.
Yes,
exactly.
You know, he should look like Hayden Christensen.
But that's why they blurred out his face, right? So
yeah.
Just to have given us that link to say there is the prime actor from the prequels.
Exactly.
Or the prime character from the prequels. And here you see him in the original trilogy era. That would have went, you know, they say a picture is 1,000 words. That would have been the definition of it.
And it would have been, I know Bail Organa kind of does that link. You mean? So it's that kind of, hey, prequel lovers. We haven't forgot about you.
But at the same time, does anybody really remember Bail Organa besides people like us? Because my sister thought Bail Organa and Galen Erso were the same person. She goes, wait, why is her father in the control room? I'm like, that's not, okay, all right.
Well, there was a lot of cut scenes from Revenge of the Sith with Mon Mothma and Bail Organa sitting around with Padme, right?
Yeah, that's a really good scene.
And it is a really good scene.
I understand why they cut it, because the movie was already like 2 hours and 20 minutes, but man, I think that scene deserves to be in the movie.
Yeah, but yeah, I think they are regarding it as canon, though.
Yes, yeah, I think so.
It's the precursor to, it's the rebellion starting right there. Like, Star Wars. That's what Star Wars is.
That's why it's been so good to see him and Mon Mothma in things like Lost Stars and Ahsoka and Star Wars Rebels. It's like, it's just really cool to me to see all that stuff. And Rogue One, I lost my mind because I'm like one of the only people who can probably say they're a pretty big Bail Organa fan.
I'm with you.
He seems like a pretty good guy.
I like him better on Law and Order.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you took it.
Especially after
Carlos stole the low-hanging fruit.
After reading Bloodline and then hearing that "I trust her with my life" line in Rogue One, oh, rip my heart out.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And it's like, you're going back to Alderaan to get blown up. That's sad.
Okay, so here we go. Nathan, reminder, your first question. What was it?
Stormtroopers.
Yes. We've passed it around the table. We've successfully dissected that. Clone troopers, army, stormtroopers, military, just police explained away. Yes. There we go. And Carlos, your questions, the naming of The Last Jedi, everything answered to your satisfaction?
I think that's what makes the Star Wars question, the Star Wars universe tick, is the unanswered questions that will never be answered because they're in the ether somewhere, lost. Yeah. So, I had a jolly old time talking about it.
Yes, it has been really awesome. Okay, so what we'll do, we'll pass around. We'll start off with Nathan. Where can everybody find you? Do you have any projects of your own you're doing or starting, or do you have anything online as far as podcasts or?
My personal Twitter is at NAFRoberts. And I am planning to, in the coming weeks, to release my own podcast called Luminous Beings. And the Twitter for that is at We Are Luminous. So you can follow me there for updates on when we're going to be releasing the first episode. You can follow me there. I think that's it. I actually had a great idea this evening. I think I'm going to do an After Dark Side type thing, and I'm going to call it Crude Matter.
Nice.
Luminous Beings and Crude Matter.
That's
nice.
Great.
That's perfect. Yeah, it just happened to work out, and I love it.
Awesome. So what's premise behind this? Obviously, it's Star Wars related.
Yes.
Okay. I know a guy at a Star Wars network. He can talk to me after the show there. We'll see what we can hook you up.
Oh, I've been in discussions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's basically just me right now, but I'm hoping that it can be a sort of hub where I can get a bunch of other Star Wars podcasters to come on, you know, maybe one at a time, maybe in groups, who knows. But where it can be a hub for Star Wars podcasters to kind of come and interact, whereas usually they're off relegated to their own shows.
Yep.
But it's kind of like what you're doing here.
Well, yeah, like this one's more geared for the like I know Carlos, you have your own show, but you're not on a Star Wars show. But I know you're a fan of the network, and the same thing as yourself, Nathan. Like this is, yes, we're spoiled. Like I get to message Ash and Kyle and say, hey, you want to do a podcast? So I get to podcast with other podcast hosts, but we're kind of getting at the fans. So maybe if you like with your, it sounds like your show, if you're just sitting down with Ash and talking about what their show is like, you mean like a one-on-one or host to host type thing.
Ash, we're going to have to schedule that, by the way.
Yeah, definitely.
There we go. Awesome.
I will be on anybody's show, full disclosure. Like you asked me to be on a show, I will definitely be on it.
And Kyle and Rob and everybody.
Outstanding. You know? Okay, so that leads us to I'm trying to segue in there for Carlos. What do you have going on?
Everything. Let's see. You could find me on Twitter @ccandidomusic. That's CCANDIDO music. or at the Thinking Out Loud, at the TOL podcast, the Thinking Out Loud podcast. If you like my t-shirt, the Rogue One t-shirt, you can get that at Teespring, Thinking Out Loud. And I have my music project going on, CarlosCandidoMusic.com. Just a bunch of stuff. Just follow me and, you know, just...
Well, and let me say, if you've listened to Tumbling Saber, if you stick around to the very end, you hear Carlos's awesome tunes at the end of the show. So you get a taste of it there. And so, yeah, you should definitely check him out and support his next Kickstarter.
There you go.
Yeah, one that comes around. I'm not sure yet. But, yeah, so Thinking Out Loud podcast, it's pretty much a podcast network where I have individual shows that I talk about soccer and the Montreal Canadiens, and then there's the main show where I just, like Rob spoke to me, you know, we spoke about it earlier.
Yep.
It's just my, you know, sober or drunken ramblings.
No, I listened to it today and it was fantastic. And I can honestly speak from experience. It is unbelievably difficult to carry an entire show on your own without passing it off. Like it's fantastic. It's a skill that I've yet to acquire, but it's really good.
Thanks very much.
Awesome. So, okay. Now, this might be a moot point when this goes out to the VIPs, because this is an early release to the VIPs, and this will go on to the main feed on Talk Star Wars next month. But Ash and Kyle, we'll start off with Ash. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at ErsatzAsh, which is ErsatzAsh. You can find me on the Skyhoppers podcast, which I co-host along with my friend Ben, and that's at SWSkyhoppers on Twitter. And you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher. We have a YouTube channel where I make like video essay type things. My co-host Ben does a Let's Play. He's about to finish up Star Wars Dark Forces right now, and it's been a pretty good time.
Nice.
I also just started another podcast as well, which is called The Disney Life, which you can find on Twitter at The Disney Life PC, where we literally just ramble on about Disney movies and everything Disney related. And I just started that like last week, so there's two episodes out, I believe. So yeah.
Awesome.
Man, you're busy. I watch too much TV.
All right. And Kyle, where tell the good folks where they can find all your good stuff.
I'm at Tumbling Saber on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Tumblingsaber.com is the website. And you can, I guess, find the show on iTunes and Stitcher and all those wonderful places. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Got a couple of ideas rattling around in my head that I hope to get out there sooner than later. I just don't know what shape they're going to take just yet. But I'm working on that and got a bunch of things I want to do in 2017 with the show. And, of course, speaking to all Star Wars fans, the whole reason I started this thing up was just to connect with Star Wars fans, wherever they may be, and just shoot the spit, as they say.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Well, anybody, if they want to find myself, I am at RobertMMCast on the Twitters, and I have a weekly show. It's called the Roman Poddingcast, and it is not Star Wars related, and it is not for children, but it's not horrible. Feel free to check that out. We are on iTunes and Stitcher and all the other places. And I also wanted to say thank you to Mark and everybody at Talk Star Wars. This is really awesome for me, for letting me play in their sandbox. And to any other Knights of the Commonwealth, I've been getting lots of messages. If you have any interest in coming on the roundtable and sitting in with us, leave me a message on Twitter at RobertCast, RobertMMCast on Twitter. Direct message me, and we'll try to set something up. And that's also as an invite to all the other hosts around the network. That includes Generation X-Wing and the Nerd Room and the Rogue Squadron podcast. And of course, I mean, if Ben wants to be on, or I was thinking maybe we can get we can have a show later on with like Cody and Corey. We were talking about Kyle. That might have to be censored. So maybe we'll have
you might want to start that one like middle of the day before Corey gets like 9 beers deep.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, Ben would love to come on.
Awesome.
So
yeah. So yeah, if anybody, and again, I have been getting messages, so I am going to get to everybody, and it's, we're just, we're the, The hardest part is, I think, is the time zones. We're trying to get – I might record the next one on a Sunday. That way we can get a lot of people from the UK and the other side of the pond on with people on North America. So that way we can hop on in early afternoon type thing. And it's not – because right now in the UK, it's very, very late or very, very early in the morning. So
before we sign off – so go ahead, Nathan.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'd love to get on with Keegan, but I don't know how in the hell that would work.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. And again, Connor and Ads, from they did a fantastic job episode one. Like, we really put them on the hot seat. We had no idea where we're going with the show. So it was like, and they did an excellent job.
Yeah, they carried the mail, man. They did a good job.
Yep. So it was, and also too, it's if once you're on the show, it doesn't mean it's going to be the last appearance. We may call on you again. So now we might have Nathan and Ads, or Connor and Carlos, or you know, like as long as we go, we'll always. I'm sure we won't have any need for looking around for people on the show.
Yeah. So that being said, like before we sign off, I just want to say on behalf of everyone, to you, Rob, that this is an awesome initiative, and we listened to episode one. Came out today for those who are not VIPs.
Yep.
And it was an awesome show. I want to congratulate you on that. And the only thing that was missing from our podcast today was an English accent. And, and I just did the ancestry.com thing. And I found out that I'm 20% British. So cheerio.
God. Sorry.
Hey, Rob, let me thank you too for putting this whole thing together. It, like Carlos said, it is a wonderful initiative to get everybody from the Commonwealth together to chat Star Wars and connect with each other. But I also want to say, don't sell yourself short. You and Roman, your podcast is absolutely hysterical. And the show you put out today, although it's a short 16 minutes, that is a huge sell job, man. That was
the
so
dreaded
fun.
Clip and show. Yeah.
Oh, that was funny, man. That was like, if anybody's looking at me from behind at work, like they'll just see my shoulders bouncing up and down because I'm laughing in my desk silently.
Yeah,
it was funny.
I have a couple of things on the top of my head. I can't see them again. It's not we're not lewd to the point. Like it's one of those. Hey, we're just a couple Canadian guys, and the way I put it is. Let's say if you're sitting at Tim Hortons having a coffee and you hear the conversation next to you. That's exactly what you're hearing, except you know.
And Kyle,
let's get at it. Yeah.
Journals of the Willing, great episode this week.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was good, man.
Thanks so much.
Awesome. So you know what? We're going to wrap it up there for now. And again, to our co-hosts and our knights, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to having this episode 2 hit to the airways. And get ready next month for episode 3. Until then, we'll talk to you next time. Later.